now that Averjean's on, Averjean, we are going to, John is going to do a roll call here, so we'll go back and get everybody's name. But I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to John Stoddard at this point. He's the chair of our DMSIG steering committee. Take it away, John.
Okay, Averjean, do we have a recording?
Trying to. I'm hoping it is.
Okay. I want to remind everybody, if please mute your phone. We'd like to avoid background noise and background music on the recording. So before we start the meeting, I'd like to do another roll call. And my name is John Stoddard. So why don't y'all just speak up and we'll take the roll as you give your name.
Walter Atherton here, and I will try the mute on this cell phone.
This is Patty Amon with DQSI.
Tom Merkel, Lockheed Martin.
Palmer, Claris Communications.
Matt Bruns, Hartford Hospital, Connecticut.
Herb White, National Weather Service.
Rick Hauschild, DMIS team.
Tim Wall with the Red Cross in Greenwich, Connecticut.
Scott Eyestone, Battelle, supporting Navy Installations Command Emergency Management.
Robert Armijo, State of Florida, Department of Health, Office of Emergency Operations.
Okay, anybody else joined us? Somebody just joined us? Go ahead.
David Sperry, Raytheon Company.
Averjean Moore, DM team.
And we have everybody? Okay. Why don't we go ahead and start our meeting. And our presenter today is Rick Skinner. And Rick is a certified geographic information specialist. And he has over 35 years of professional experience and nearly 15 years in health geographics, healthcare preparedness and hospital land security. And in addition to Rick's full-time job as the GIS director with a central MA consulting firm, Rick is also a volunteer member of the Tri-Regional Emergency Planning Committee and serves as a GIS advisor. And Rick, I'd like to turn the meeting over to you.
Thanks, John. Welcome, everybody. Don't have colds. I hope you stay healthy.
We can't hear you, Rick.
Can you hear me?
It's kind of low, I think.
Oh.
Yeah.
You hear me okay?
I can hear you. It's a little bit low.
Is that any better?
Oh, that's better.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, let me go off the speakerphone then.
Okay.
I hope this doesn't disconnect me. Still there?
We're here. You're
okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for Averjean for inviting me to this discussion today. I guess how it got started was I've been working with the Tri-EPIC Regional Emergency Planning Committee as John said, as a volunteer GIS advisor. A little background, I guess. The Tri-EPIC group has been meeting almost monthly since October of 2001, probably one of the longest running meetings of this type, at least in Massachusetts. And it's based with four towns and a community hospital. And I am a resident of one of the towns, and that's why I started to get involved with Tri-EPIC, because of my interest in emergency management, healthcare preparedness, and that sort of thing. And we've been kicking around an idea for probably over a year now of somehow creating a regional GIS capability for the group, for four towns and the hospital, and never could really identify a funding source for it until the new DHS FY08 grants were announced earlier in early February. And I saw that, and I started looking at the interoperable communications grant guidelines, and I said, "Gee, this this is Demas, because the whole thing talks about, you know, open systems and CAP compliance and those kinds of things. And I recognizing that the group, that the TriEpic group, is not one that's well funded from any direction, it kind of made sense to me to try to build something around Demas. To provide them with a little bit of GIS capability and really the interoperable information piece, which is, you know, probably more important, really. And so that's where it got started. I've talked with a number of people in Massachusetts to find out what the process is. You know, how do Massachusetts, they have a state administrative agent that actually makes the application to Homeland Security for the funding, and supposedly they're considering the needs of the regions and the local communities when they do that. But I haven't been able to find any kind of a formal process for, you know, bubbling up those kinds of needs. So in talking with the state administrative agent, he said basically we had to, you know, put our thoughts on paper, run it through the central, and in our case it's the central region Homeland Security Advisory Council, and then they would represent the 74 towns in our central Massachusetts area and present those needs up to the state level. So that's kind of what we're doing. And so far I've gotten a lot of good feedback on the idea. It's not a – I don't think it's a new idea. I think Matt Bruns tried to, you know, to get something rolling like this even in Connecticut with a lot of towns. And but what I'm trying to do is take the cost-effective aspect of Demas being free, you know, minimal costs really for setting it up, doing the training, doing the data integration, and that sort of thing, and pitching it on the fact that this provides the local community with interoperability within itself, within its departments, or I should say between the departments of the town, but and also the interoperability between the towns, in this case of the Regional Emergency Planning Committee, and then because other towns have other EM systems, in Massachusetts, MEMA, the state Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency, has WebEOC, the Department of Public Health has WebEOC, Boston, Emergency Management has WebEOC, so we have the capability of being able to communicate, you know, on a larger scale depending on the event. And one of the things I thought was interesting in talking with some of the folks locally was that they know for a fact that several of the 9/11 terrorists passed through a couple of our towns. Whether they were tracking credit cards or what, I don't know, but they're very definite about that those guys passed through our area. And we have two interstates. We're at the intersection of I-84, which comes up from Connecticut and links to I-95 out of New York, and that connects with the Mass Turnpike, which runs east and west between, you know, Boston and Albany. So it's a kind of a major interstate transportation corridor. So I think, you know, with the fact that the DHS funding is substantially decreasing, the central region of Massachusetts is supposed to get something like about $3 million this year out of the FY08 funds, and that's a substantial decrease from previous years, and it comes down to about $40,000 per community. Yeah, on an average basis. And then next year, it's even worse. I was looking at a testimony from Senator Lieberman recently on the FY09, on the president's FY09 budget proposal, and there's something like a 79% reduction in the state Homeland Security grant program. So I think what it boils down to is if we are to continue to try to meet our level of preparedness that's necessary, you know, we just have to be a whole lot more creative And I think using cost-effective systems with, you know, limited grant funding, we can at least build a rudimentary platform for the interoperability. That's kind of it in a nutshell. I don't know if you've, if anybody's looked at the my blog, which has the proposal on it with and a diagram for John and Matt. You'll recognize that as a modification of the CWID, and Scott, the modification of the CWID conceptual layout that we used last June. And, I mean, when I saw that, when I participated in CWID and I saw that type of an arrangement using, you know, a variety of CAP-compliant systems and flowing over the DM Open network, coming from a hospital background, healthcare preparedness, I said, wow, this hospitals have to have. You know, I mean, this meets the needs for those hospitals. So, and now that I'm not working in the hospital sector anymore, but in the, I guess, in the private sector, I'm still pushing, you know, and being very interested in this almost to the level of a passion. And I just think it just makes so much sense. So I guess at that, I just kind of leave it open to discussion. If you've had a chance to look at what I'm proposing, because I'm, you know, wide open for comments and suggestions. You know, is this the right way to go? Is there a better way to do it? How could it be improved? You know, those kinds of things.
Okay. Rick, is that on your, the blob is on your website?
Yeah, it's at healthgisguide.com. If you just click on that, it'll take you right to that. The proposal and the diagram is the first thing on the page.
Okay.
John, the link was in the message it was sent out.
I'm sorry?
Can you repeat that? HealthGIS?
HealthGISGuy.com.
Yeah, this is Rick Hauschild. I think Ava Jean's, in her weak voice there, is trying to say that the link is on the message that went out about this meeting, too, if you look at that.
Right.
Do we have any questions?
But, you know, the diagram kind of illustrates that, you know, the disaster happens locally. As it expands, you might need to bring in other towns, other regions, and eventually perhaps the state. That's the scalable aspect of this thing, using DEMIS and the other, you know, CAP-compliant systems. We used four other systems at CWID, and they all seem to work, you know, pretty nicely together, one of which was the WebEOC. And I understand the new version is even better as far as CAP compliance. And then, if it's the kind of thing, in CWID, we also tested whether we could go horizontally with, you know, communicating with the military side. And that worked very nicely, too. So there's that potential that you could, you know, you could expand your system even further. I mean, one of our, we have Westover Air Reserve Base up here, which is one of the major global transportation hubs, if you will, for things going in and out of Iraq and Afghanistan and so forth. So, I mean, obviously that's a high visibility, high profile target. And that's probably not more than 20 miles from here. So that would be an implication for the military that could potentially get involved with something.
Rick, Scott with question.
Yep.
How far is New London from your tri-epic region?
New London, Connecticut?
Yeah.
Well, that's at the lower end of Connecticut. We're in southern Massachusetts, and New London would be southern Connecticut. So I'm guessing probably, what do you think, Matt, maybe 40 miles?
Probably closer to 100, actually. There's no really straight line point to point.
Oh, okay.
You know, Navy is acquiring a commercial off-the-shelf product that is also CAP compliant and open ready. So, and there's, I was in a meeting with Navy N6, that's computer and network stuff, last week, where they expressed a lot of interest in cross-platform data sharing, military civil, for obvious reasons.
Sure, sure. Is that the surface water or the underwater, what is it called, the undersea Warfare Command or something like that?
Yeah, it's a submarine base.
Okay.
So they have a very rigorous emergency management capability there, given their intrinsic threats,
okay.
I would say.
Do you work with Roger Howlett?
No.
Okay.
Rick, Jim Hamill.
Yep.
How you doing? Hey, I was on another conference call, and I just got on to hear the tail end.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking at your website,
yep.
The management proposal. Just so the folks know, I know you mentioned the Seawood trials here. That setup that Rick is showing in the block, the combined team of the Army, Battelle, ECBC, Air Force Research Labs and Monmouth University did receive the first place for technology and innovation from that exercise from the IAM organization.
Hmm. Do you have a website for that that announces that? Or?
You'd have to go just to IAM and see. Norm Mueller put us in for that through ECBC.
Mm-hmm.
And the combined team, they wanted for the combined team effort of military, private sector, and academia.
Mm, okay.
Hi, this is David Coggeshall. I also joined late, so I had missed the main presentation, but I did read the proposal, and in fact, I'm the one that asked about the tables, Rick, that you put in later.
Oh, okay, yep.
A couple of questions. One, the proposal seemed that the expenses were primarily in hardware, equipment, and training. Is there a software component, or is your approach to basically use existing software capabilities?
Well, the approach I'm proposing is to use the Disaster Management Interoperability Services
right.
tool. That's it.
Okay.
So that's free.
Okay.
The hardware I'm putting in there only because some of the towns may not have existing, hardware that they can dedicate to this initiative. So I'm just at this point I'm looking at if we started with nothing, what would it cost?
Yeah.
So we're looking at probably 50,000 to 60,000 for everything, for the four towns and the hospital and the armory. So that's like six entities that are sharing in that cost. The armory is it's an old armory in one of the towns that's been taken over as a alternative influenza specialty care unit for the hospital. It's a shelter, and it's also the site for the regional EOC.
Okay, my question is primarily about the software, and will you primarily be utilizing CAP and DMIS and DM Open?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Right.
We're working with some of the OASIS people on the resource management, EDXL protocol, and we're starting to build a simple implementation of resource management so that we can do resource requesting and dispatch
mm-hmm.
through a system like DEMIS. Is that something that would fit in with your ideas of how to use this?
Sure. I mean, I'm hoping to start off with this platform, and I know as the RM standard comes through, and HAVE would be another one I'd like to see implemented because of the link with the hospital. I would hope that the DM would, DEMIS would be able to incorporate those as well. I just don't know what the future enhancements are for DEMIS. I was hoping that maybe Sarah Hyder or somebody would be online that could kind of give us a heads up on what's going on.
And my other question was for the gentleman that spoke about the fact that they used a commercially available CAP compliant product. Wondered if you could tell us what product that was.
Oh, were you speaking to the Navy acquisition, sir?
I believe someone said they were using a commercial product that has become CAP compliant.
Yeah, that product is Prevastar.
How would you spell that?
Previstar.
Okay.
If you just Google that word, you'll get a lot of information about the product.
All right. Thank you.
And, David, during the Seawood trial last June, we also worked with WebEOC, MyState USA, NBC Warn, and what was the other one, guys? EM Systems?
Well, the Army's Integrated Information Management System, IIMS.
Right. That was the that was that other backbone. But there was another another system we used.
Oh, E-Team.
E-Team, right? Okay.
This is Jim. E-Team really didn't play in that scenario.
Oh, okay.
They hadn't had their interfaces built yet. Supposed to have finished that. I don't know if that was completed.
Okay.
So the names were Privistar, NBC One, Army IMS, WebEOC, E-Team, and was there one other?
I believe that's NBC Warn, WARN.
Right.
David, yeah. if you're on my on the blog on the left hand side where it says Seawood 2007.
Right.
If you click that later and that's a whole kind of a diary of what we did and the systems we used and everything, you can check that out.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So I guess, like I said, what we're trying to do is run this up the flagpole here in Massachusetts and hopefully get it included with the FY08 grant application. The other thing that I'm trying to pitch also is that this could be used as a model for, you know, any locality, any region that doesn't have this capability. They could very easily adapt it to their own situation and just using their own their local data to populate it. So I'm hoping that we can test it in the Tri-Epic region for the four towns and the hospital, but then hopefully some of the other towns and regions in Massachusetts, or actually anywhere in the country, I guess, could adapt this as a model that they could use, particularly in the situation with, you know, the limited funding and that sort of thing.
Well, Rick, this map runs in Connecticut. I mean, those are really the same motivations why we did the pilot in Connecticut prior to
mm-hmm.
Top Off 3.
Right.
It had a lot going for it, a lot to offer. Being free was top of the list, probably. But, you know, also people like Scott and Rick Kalschold and the rest of the team were tremendously supportive and helped set it up. So that was really a good ticket. Going forward, it's a little bit trickier now because I think, I don't even know if Rick can speak to this, but we're not too sure what the future of this app is, if there's even going to be any further development on this particular platform or not. So maybe Rick can comment on that if he knows anything or if there's anything he can share. But also I'm curious what you know from the state of Massachusetts and WebEOC. What's coming down from above? Are they going to roll out statewide licensing or any ideas that way?
It's my understanding that MEMA's making access to WebEOC available to each of the municipalities. The one downside I see with that is it still puts everything in the control of MEMA. Whereas this, you know, this approach is, if we don't need to involve MEMA, we don't. We just, you know, we just work our own communities rather than going up through the chain and you know, running through MEMA just to handle some local disaster. So I think the fact that the approach that I'm proposing will interface with MEMA and the WebEOC, I think it gets us to the to that same connectivity interoperability issue.
Is Rick Hauschild able to comment on the future of DEMIS?
This is Rick Hauschild. I'm here. But I really don't want to comment only because I'm not sure myself. I've been assured from Sarah Heider, assured that that everything's in place for the funding to actually move from the Office of the Chief Information Office of Department of Homeland Security over to her as the program manager, but it has not actually taken place yet. It seems to be every day, you know, they keep saying it'll happen any day now. And it's all contingent on a memorandum of understanding that she tried to push through and I guess was told that it'll go through when it goes through. So she's still waiting for that piece of bureaucratic paperwork to finish. And she has some plans for the near future to begin with a 3-month survey and study to go out to you guys, you know, the users, et cetera, to really see what everyone wants to accomplish and then work from there. So that's about as much as I can tell you at this time. I know the funding for this fiscal year is there. It just hasn't been transferred as far as the control. That's about all I can say right now.
Can you say whether or not, is Battelle still involved?
Battelle is involved on a very small subcontract just with some data center work to try to support the migration from Ashburn down to Stennis. We're almost finished with that. We just did an operational test, really everything tested at Stennis except a connection was not completed for internet capability for weather forecast. They had to do that, and so we'll have to retest when they do that, just make sure it didn't affect any other server communications. But we were complete as of Tuesday with all the operational tests, and all the functions performed well. So that's really all that Battelle's involved right now. I really can't speak to any contract, future contract work or whatever, once the funding comes through, because I just don't have the authority for that.
One other question. We started a COG out here in San Francisco called, or based on our Golden Gate Safety Network for DEMIS about 3 years ago, and at that time we couldn't get enough traction to really get people involved, but we never formally dropped off and were included in some of the software updates. If we want to charge forth again and try to resurrect the DEMIS use out here, are there still people in place that can help us set up a COG and get oriented and so forth?
Yeah, if you set up the COG, which I remember that, David, it's still set up. It's still there. It's still accessible. You can still download the software you need to update, and your logins will still work. If you don't remember what they are, I can get that information to you.
That would be my first problem, yep.
Okay. I've what's your email?
The email is ibcomm@aol.com. That's IBCOMM, ibcomm@aol.com.
Yeah, that's what you had before. Okay, yeah, I'll email you the information.
Okay, great. And like I said, we're working out here with Rex Brooks on the EDXL-RM, and we're building a sample implementation to see if we can make it work for us here locally.
Okay.
But, Rick Hochschild, Matt Bruns again. At the moment, there's still a commitment to keep the back-end servers that run the open architecture and also all the daemon data exchange. Those are alive and are going to be staying alive for a while?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. There's nothing going to be shut down at all. All service will continue as it is. The problem we've had, Matt, as you know, is just that we've had no further development because, you know, all of the development plans that Battelle had and all were halted when, you know, stalled when they changed everything. They changed the federal program manager, the primary contractor, and the physical location. So there's all of the services that were provided or have been provided will continue to be provided for now. And then, you know, hopefully there'll be some new development and updating once we get this funding through.
Yeah, that's really been a problem all along with you. You and Scott have been chewing your nails on that for 4 or 5 years that I know about, so I hope it settles out.
Right.
Now, this is Rick Skinner again. I wonder if we could just kind of jump back to the proposal a little bit. Fundamentally, how does it look? I mean, is it something that I should be encouraged to push forward in the way that I've got it written up, or would I have a better chance of taking it, you know, modifying it or taking it somewhere else? Because, you know, we can't do it without some funding. And, again, this is a, you know, I'm not approaching this as a consultant. I'm approaching it as just a volunteer member on the committee. So I'd appreciate anybody's inputs or gut reactions or whatever.
Rick, this is Amy Sebring. I wondered if you'd, you know, and if anybody has comments for Rick, we certainly want them to chime in. But I wonder if, you know, we know, I know your interest in particular is, you know, the GIS capability.
Mm-hmm.
Could you talk a little bit about, you know, and I see you've got, you know, nice long tables of data here, what you envision, you know, that might be something unique that we'd like to hear about.
Well, yeah, as far as the as far as the tables that I provided, that was, I guess, more to, again, it's more for the folks in the state to get a better appreciation that, you know, a lot of thought's been going into this whole issue. And, for example, the examples of data layers that I've assembled, and that's not an exhaustive list. It's still a work in progress. I actually created that over the last couple of years. I actually started when I was at the hospital, at the Bay State Medical Center. And there's another matrix that actually goes along with this. And if you think about this list going down the first column and then across the top of the page, each of the columns representing one of the hazards, you know, the technical, natural, human-caused, hazmat-type hazards that might occur. And then the question is, what information do I need in order to respond effectively to that particular hazard, whether it's a fire or a pandemic or an electrical outage or whatever it happens to be? And you go down through that list and you check off these data layers. And then once you sum all of those check marks up in the far right-hand side, you get your kind of like your framework data for the most likely events that might occur for the town, for the hospital, whatever the entity happens to be. So that's where that list came from. What I'd like to see eventually is pulling together as much of this information as it relates to the critical infrastructure, key resources that Homeland Security has identified, so that we have the information at hand, because, you know, when it's time to respond, it's no time to prepare. And that's what I keep trying to preach. You know, we got to prepare to be prepared. So that's where that came from. The second table that lists the hazard events, this comes from the hazard vulnerability analysis tool that most hospitals and healthcare systems are using to evaluate their own exposure to events and then try to prioritize. They go through a matrix, and then they prioritize the ones that are most likely to occur, the highest probability events, and then hopefully build their emergency management plans and continuity of operations plans around those top sentinel events, if you will, or the key events. That's basically the two tables. The one other table is just a list of some of the CAP compliant applications.
Have you submitted your proposal to the region, the central region?
No, we're having TriEPIC has their regular monthly meeting next Tuesday, and we're just going to kind of roll it out to the entire group. We've got several key players, you know, the supporters from the different towns have already seen it. They like it. They've made a few suggestions here and there, but we want to just pass it by the entire committee to see if anybody has an issue that we're not aware of. And then my plan is probably by the end of next week, the chairman of the committee will submit it to the region, and we'll CC a couple of people at the upper state level that are going to need to have this information to make an application. Then we'll see what happens. And you know, we may be told to go pound sand. We already know what you guys need, and don't tell us. I mean, that's wouldn't be atypical. On the other hand, they may very much appreciate it and like the idea that they've got some focus to how that money should be spent.
One of the points that, you know, comes up repeatedly, you know, when we're talking about using and basically any kind of incident management system, is the idea of having daily usefulness, so that you are, familiar, you know, when the disaster hits, you already know how to run it. Have you given any thought to any kind of, you know, daily normal applications for, you know, the system that you're trying to put together?
Yeah, I would like to have it. What I'd like to do is set up each town as a cog, and then the various departments within that town would be set up as users, not individuals, but departments. So fire and police and EMS and DPW, for example, would maybe be the four principal users. And, you know, I would like to see this being used by them for just the daily that happen. I mean, that would be what I would, you know, encourage them to do. And then as they have inter-town situations between police and fire, for example, that they would implement the system to support that too. So, yeah, I definitely agree. There, you know, I've always said that we shouldn't have any disaster management systems. We should have systems that will function during a disaster and just be ramped up to meet the disaster rather than something new. This was something we saw in hospitals all the time. It's, you know, the hospitals are always overrun with patients, and they run a certain patient tracking system or triage system or whatever, and then they develop some system that's going to be employed when they have a mass casualty event. And you know, when you have something like that happen, it's not the time to throw chaos into the middle of confusion.
Rick, Matt Bruns again. I concur that it does have to be useful daily, and that's a value that people will then become more invested in, and they'll have a reason to turn it on regularly. But a couple of observations about what happened in Connecticut. We had the momentum of top-off, which was a huge thing to kind of piggyback on top of, and we ended up with five regions in about 90 towns with multiple departments in each town plus about a dozen hospitals. We had a pretty large setup here in Connecticut, and we didn't. This is a zero-budget project. We didn't buy any hardware for anybody, just to be honest with you. You could probably do what you're trying to do without the hardware piece if you get resistance on that side of it.
Yeah, I'm just putting that in for now as a placeholder. We may not even pass the budget item up to Central Region and let them come back to us and say, well, this is nice, but how much is it going to cost?
Right.
But, you know, I don't have the input from each town to say that, yes, I have a laptop that you can dedicate to this should you need it.
The other thing to be sure, too, Rick Halchild, has 2.33 been tested on Vista?
This is Rick. I think they're doing some more testing on that right now. As a matter of fact, I think Patel is doing it. There were, as I understand it, there were an issue or two with some of the graphics drivers or the something to do with that anyway.
Yeah, that's a really key question. Of course, any new hardware you get is going to be loaded with Vista, and that could really be a nasty showstopper. So,
absolutely.
Well, I think if we were to purchase new hardware, we would take the option of downgrading to XP.
No one will support it.
What's that?
I don't think if anybody will do that. But
well, I know the Panasonic Toughbooks will. That's an option.
Yeah.
And that's what I was pricing in there.
Yeah. So like, if we could get stuck, you probably could go the other way. The other thing way against it is, what is the license fee to get involved with Massachusetts installation of WebEOC, and can they do it on a more cellular basis? I'd really recommend, frankly, that you not have individual COGs for each town, but have one regional COG, because moving information between COGs is really not – it's got some real drawbacks in DEMIS.
Mm-hmm.
It's much easier if everybody starts in the same sandbox.
Mm-hmm. Well, we could even have two sets of COGs. We could have a regional COG for things that expand beyond the town boundaries, but then just have the have the town COGs so that they have that daily use and familiarity.
Yeah, we did that here too, to have a state level one, to have the state regional and local, but everybody started off on a regional one. But even still going from regional to state, it was tricky. It was we tried that in top off, and it does have some limitations in the current version. These were planned to be resolved in later versions of DEMIS, but then the music stopped, and I'm not too sure what's going to happen next.
Well, this is Ava Jean. Rick, I think that Matt's comment just now is one of the things or the type of thing that you were hoping to hear. And are there other people who have comments along that line that you might take into consideration?
Yeah, I'm wide open for suggestions.
This is Murphy Palmer from Claros Communications. Just want to jump in here a minute on the hardware question with regards to purchasing new hardware and having to deal with the Vista issue.
Mm-hmm.
We recently sent, I'm a strategic advisor to Claros Communications, and my partner and I also own Communications International Teleport. We're an international long-haul satellite carrier. We recently sent 200 laptops to Hanoi, and we're over there doing some install stuff for World Bank. But apparently, under their licensing agreement with Microsoft, we bought DB9000 or something like that. But we bought them simply with a formatted drive and left it at that. And no software on board whatsoever, and we installed a company-licensed version of XP Professional on the laptops, along with some Linux and Red Hat software that we use. But Hewlett-Packard didn't have a problem with that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're looking at something like this, where you're looking at needs of the nation and disaster management, that just about any hardware purveyor out there will work with you. But we found HP to be more than easy to work with. They were just really straight up about it. They said, okay, fine, no license fees for the Vista software, and we got a really good price on the machine. We were off and running. Everybody was happy.
Okay. So you bought the bare bones machine with nothing, and then installed your own XP on top on that?
Yes, we did. All we had was a formatted drive.
Yep. Okay.
And was there a big price advantage to that?
Pardon?
Was there a big price advantage to that?
About $210 per machine.
Wow.
Yeah. Now you buy a laptop these days, and or any PC, I don't care what it is, you spend, if you don't buy it right, you spend 3 hours deinstalling hardware or software you don't need. They come with so much rubbish on them anymore for everything on the planet, and I think the machines we have over in Vietnam have maybe 6 pieces of software on them. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need. So we're not real. We're not big fans of Microsoft. I'll be honest with you. We like things that work.
Okay, everybody a fan of Microsoft, raise your hand, please. Yeah, I thought so, yeah.
Anyway, I thought I would throw that in there.
Yeah. Actually, the big issue with Demis and the operating system we had with XP was that was not so much Demis, but was the VPN client. SmartPass had significant problems. So even if it came to worse, there's probably a Vista-compliant version of SmartPass these days that we could probably manually upgrade to if you needed to, but Rick may have run across that already.
Well, Rick and I, this is Rick Skinner, but Rick Hauschlett and I have been dealing with the SmartPass issue. One thing I found, which I haven't worked around yet, I tried to install Demis and SmartPass on my office laptop, which has the fingerprint recognition security system, and that seems to be a big conflict. And
yeah.
Rick was looking into something that would, you can explain it better than I can, Rick, but somehow adjust the stack of service providers or something so that there's no conflict there, but we're still working on that piece.
I can just see Scott Eisenstone shaking his head. It's still happening because they had huge problems with some DLL conflicts with SmartPass VPNs with
that
application.
Yeah, this is Rick Hauschel. That was one of the reasons why, one of the good justifications, among others, to begin to develop to the thin client, and use SSL instead of VPN as a security.
Yeah.
Rick, this is Amy again. Have you done any research for the state, your state interoperability plan? The statewide communications interoperability plan?
Yeah, I haven't researched it thoroughly. I know that there's a state homeland security strategic plan which calls for an enhancement of GIS services, and I believe that speaks to interoperability as well. I have to look at this, the state communications plan. But it seems to me I did look at that, and I didn't see any stumbling blocks.
Well, the focus on that, you know, in most states has still been, you know, the radio communications, the voice communications.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, the data interoperability is eligible, and that's a whole nother pot of money. I just don't know, you know, the public safety interoperability grants. I don't know what the timing is, you know, on that. For, I think they've had to do their justifications, you know, I'm not real sure, but, you know, you might look at that and see if there's not, I think it would help your application if you could say this is consistent with the state interoperability plan.
Yeah, that type of, there's little statements like that I need to try to put in there if I can substantiate them, definitely, or to say that it doesn't conflict.
Hi,
any more feedback for Rick on his application or any other comments?
I didn't hear anybody say, this is a dumb idea, don't do it. That's really what my bottom line was. Because I've always gone by the philosophy, if you tell me it can't be done, sit back and watch it happen. So I would have found a way to modify this and push it through.
Do you think even if you didn't get a grant, I mean, with the DEMA software being available, do you think you at least might be able to do some kind of limited implementation of it?
Possibly. The grant, see, one of the problems we have that I've seen in our four towns is the getting the people to, you know, put the time in to learn the system and so forth. There'd have to be some kind of funding to backfill their time. I mean, if they're paid to do it, then they'll do it. If they do it out of the goodness of their heart, it's probably not going to happen.
There's one possibility, which is to use training and exercises as a way to introduce and utilize DEMAS.
Mm-hmm.
And training and exercise is something they're supposed to do anyway. So rather than DEMAS being a separate subject, use it as part of what you need to do in order to train and exercise.
Right, right. Yeah, we had actually talked about that on another smaller grant that was made available. It was leftover NIMS training money from FY06 that was made available to the towns. And in this case, my region, the regional emergency planning committee, decided to go after the $50,000 by spending $45,000 on a mobile generator and the other $5,000 on training.
Yeah.
But that gives them some additional capabilities that they didn't have before. So
that's an excellent point, by the way. I mean, one reason why I think we had a pretty successful pilot was because we had Topo 3 coming and people had this deadline, that there was definitely something to aim for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we'd been trying to do it cold out of thin air, I really don't know how far we would have gotten, and especially because it's free. It was very strange. People actually resisted using it because, well, how good can it be? Is it free?
Well, it's not really free. Somebody still has to take the time to learn it and train people. And,
right.
And I mean, there's still a lot of, you know, background stuff that has to be done that would be nice to get some money for it to help offset that effort.
Yeah. The other big lesson for us, by the way, was cultural. We found that the technical problems were easy, but the cultural problems of getting people who are not used to collaborating in real time
mm-hmm.
to actually do it was a significant problem.
I made the comment last night that, you know, when I was talking to my wife about this conference call today and how, you know, we can, as emergency management people, we can pick up and call almost anybody in the country and get all kinds of free advice and help and support and everything, but when it comes down to the local level, nobody wants to talk to each other. You know, it's kind of ironic.
Yep.
Rick, we have about 8 minutes.
Yep.
Going to run into our limitation here. Is there anything you would like to say in summarizing
One thing, Rick, this is David Coggeshall again. Is there a phone number where I could conference or call you offline after this meeting to discuss something?
Are you talking to Rick or John?
Rick Skinner.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can call me at 508-471-9608.
We're working with Google Maps and a common operating picture out here that might be useful to you. And I won't take the group's time, but I'd like to call you afterwards if you're available.
Sure. After 2:30, though.
Okay.
I've got another call to do. But, well, anyway, you know, I appreciate everybody being online and the suggestions and the comments. And I think in some cases the lack of comment and lack of suggestion is encouraging as well. That, you know, I need to fine-tune this thing. I've gotten some comments from my local group that I need to factor in too. But they're basically it's as you see it on that website. That's what we're going to try to float through as a prototype for other communities, but hopefully at least something that we can operate, implement within our own four towns. And eventually I'd like to even take this concept and have it develop a platform for interoperability between hospitals, because that's almost as difficult an issue as interoperability between towns.
Okay. Rick, I want to thank you for your time and your contribution to the meeting. Ava Jean or Amy, do you have anything that you would like to add?
I think Tom Merkel, are you still on the line with us?
I'm still here.
Okay. Were you going to do a little wrap-up?
Yeah, I want to thank Rick Skinner for, I think, an excellent conversation, certainly very spirited, both in a technical and the collaboration efforts amongst the locals or lack thereof. I think that would pretty much do it.
Okay, thank you very much. On behalf of everybody, Rick, thanks very much. We're getting some kind of odd noise now, but hopefully we'll have a recording, and Rick, I'm sure I can express for everybody, we wish you the best of luck in your application. And,
thank you.
And, just keep us posted time to time on how it's going. Use the mailing list, whatever. It's great to be able to learn from everybody.
Okay, I will.
All right. Well,
thank you all.
Everybody. Well,
thank you.
Hit the gavel here and say we're adjourned. But Tom
okay.
Merkel, could you stay on the line for a minute, please?
I can do that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you all.
Bye-bye.
Tom?
Yes?
Okay. So I understand you're working with ODC?
That is correct.
On a certain project? I was wondering if you were on, the project they were going to start on the core services and so on, or is it just a totally different project?